Welcome to Film Fight Club. I'm Glenn Falkenstein from Falcon Screen, and we are joined by freelance writer and critic Virat Nehru.
Hello, hello.
And Sydney filmmaker Chris Evans.
Hello.
So we've got a big, big show planned. We are talking Borg v. McEnroe, the big film in cinemas this week. We're very excited to get into that one. We are talking Harry Dean Stanton's Lucky, his last film yet released, and Blade of the Immortal in cinemas this week. So we've got a lot to get through. But first, we're very excited. The Japanese Film Festival kicks off in Sydney and around the country. It starts in Sydney this week on the 16th and runs through the 26th at Event Cinemas George Street. And we have the program coordinator for the JFF, Margaret Cortez, joining us. Margaret, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So, Margaret, you've got a big program planned. Can you tell us, we're all going to opening night, we're quite excited. Can you tell us about Mumon, The Land of Stealth, the opening night film?
Mumon is a really exciting title and has already sold out some sessions in Sydney and Melbourne. There are still some seats left for the opening night, of course, down in Sydney. And it's by the filmmaker called Yoshihiro Nakamura, which means you're going to get a bit of your traditional period epic type of film, but at the same time, it's going to feel a bit rock and roll because it's Nakamura making it. And it's got comedy, it's got action, and at the same time, it's got a lot of political intrigue in it. So there's something for everybody in it, and I can't think of a better opening film for the Japanese Film Festival.
Oh, fantastic. We're very excited to see it tomorrow.
Yes, and one of the other attractions of the festival is Memoirs of a Murderer. Now, I'm really excited to see that because the premise itself looks quite fascinating. What can people expect from this one?
Memoirs of a Murderer, some people might know of the original Korean version, also by the same, which goes by the same title, but the Japanese version by Yu Iriye, he really managed to make it his own. So people can expect the same type of kind of like thriller tropes, but it's one thing that might be good news for some people is it's not going to be as gory as the the Korean version. It's still going to have some shock factor in it, but the cast, I think, is what makes it work really well. So we've got Tatsuya Fujiwara, who is famous for playing roles in Death Note.
Yeah, it looks fantastic, and I realize it did pretty well in the US as well, so I'm looking forward to the response in Australia.
Yeah, it's already selling very fast, so only a few seats left.
Something I'm really looking forward to is After We Vanish. I'm a big fan of Kiyoshi Kurosawa. I really enjoyed the selection of Creepy last year, which was just fantastically directed. And this one sounds pretty interesting. It sounds like it's a bit of an Invasion of the Body Snatchers type scenario.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of, I would describe it as kind of like a slice of life invasion story, which doesn't really make any sense. But it's still very, it's atmospheric as a lot of Kiyoshi Kurosawa's films are. But at the same time, it's an alien film without the explosions and, you know, the slimy creatures that we're normally familiar with when it comes to alien invasion stories. It's a very humane story. So I think Kurosawa uses aliens, whether as a metaphor or as a plot device, in order to really delve into the human condition.
Right, yeah, he's always been very good at using atmosphere to bring out sort of the dark side of people. So, but it sounds like, from what I'm hearing, this one might be a little bit more optimistic, despite this really bleak background. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it does. It actually does end with an optimistic tone, but it's really hard to place it because it really is, in the truth of the word, a genre bender. And I think people should be able to, I think, look forward to this film. It's not going to be like Creepy.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a departure from Creepy. So to those who are up for another challenge, definitely check this Kurosawa film out.
Sounds like a great one for people who are up for interesting, strange cinema.
Fantastic. And another totally interesting, strange cinema, one film I'm very much looking forward to, I know it's playing a number of times throughout the festival, including on Saturday night, is Hamon Yakuza Boogie. Now, I read the description, and this sounds, in some senses, like a very serious film, but it also seems very frenetic and, in some senses, could be quite fun.
I would describe it as a bit of a Japanese dark comedy, and some people just think the premise is ridiculous because, I mean, it's called Yakuza Boogie.
Yeah.
But it is quite comic, but it's quite witty. It still has a lot of your gangster sort of fight scenes. There will be a bit of blood, but it's wittier than your regular action flick. And the fact that it's set in Osaka as well, the pace of the comedy, it just makes it different because of that. They speak in an Osaka dialect and they've got that Osaka type of humour.
Right, right. Well, fantastic. Well, Saturday night, looking forward to that one.
Yeah, another one I'm really looking forward to is In This Corner of the World. I've been following the release of this one for quite a while. It's been very, very well received. Could you tell us a little bit about that? I know it's a sort of slower paced drama set in Hiroshima during World War II.
Yes, it is. But it's just a beautifully hand-drawn animation, and the way it was animated just makes it so captivating. And the characters, the main character in it, all the characters really draw you into the story. I know it's set in the Second World War, but the themes of courage under fire, or courage in the face of adversity, is still something that a lot of people will be able to relate to, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard only really, really good things.
One of my absolute favourites, what I'm looking forward to most, is Sion Sono's Anti-Porno. Now, I've been following Sono's work for quite some time, and it's been kind of hit and miss, so either or, whether it's hits or misses the mark, I'm excited for both options, so I'm keeping my mind open. What can people expect from this one?
I think this is on top of, it's probably my top five list of films this year. And same with, I've also had a kind of like a love-hate relationship with Sony films, because some people, his fans insist that his films are a bit of actually feministic, and it's trying to beat misogyny and all of that. But then you look at them and you're like, that's what it is trying to propagate, this like misogyny in filmmaking.
Yeah, but I agree with that.
Yeah, it's an anti-porno. He finally makes a true feminist film, I think.
That's a big claim.
He's been trying for a while, with mixed results. That one about the wind was like a really confused as a kind of feminist statement, yet also really, really misogynistic and simple.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Yeah. I can't remember what it was called, but it was like the wind was killing people, and there was this.
Tag.
Yeah, right? Tag, right. That wasn't good, but he's done some great ones.
Yeah, I had to watch Tag a few times before I started getting it, but then it was like, oh, maybe it's just my brain trying to trick me into liking it.
Right. Yeah.
But Anti-Porno is just a visual feast. I think whether you are a Sono fan or you're not, I think you should sit through it from start to end, as it is a film within a film within a film, and there will be a lot of surprises in it. But it's just great filmmaking. It's a very intelligent film, and to those who are after feminist cinema by Sion Sono, which sounds like I'm trying to telling a joke, but it's very feminist.
I'm quite intrigued now. I've heard Rot talk about this one quite a bit, so I'm very interested to see it.
Yeah, he's made some great films, Glenn. Yeah. I think it could really pay off.
There's only one screening in Sydney, I believe, so people should just get on that and just get a seat and basically prepare for everything.
Yep.
Fantastic. Yep. One I've actually had the pleasure of seeing already is The Tokyo Night Sky Is Always the Densest Shade of Blue by filmmaker Yo Ishii, who's also coming to Australia. It's quite a powerful film, and there were some very moving moments in it. Are you excited to show this one to an Australian audience?
Definitely. I think it will be to those who are familiar with Japanese films of the art house kind, I think they would definitely like this. But to those who are used to a mainstream kind of Japanese cinema, this is something fresh that I highly recommend. And it is really a portrait of Tokyo, but a kind of Tokyo that if you're just a tourist or just passing by, is something that you really won't see. And I've spoken to other people on the team and those from Tokyo who've seen it, and they said that it really does capture the essence of Tokyo. So yeah, I hope that's interesting enough for people to go and try and check it out.
I think it is. In some sense, as many people would have seen Ellipsis during the Sydney Film Festival. I'm quite excited because the screening is on the afternoon of the 25th at Event Cinemas, and I'll be running a Q&A with the filmmaker, so please do turn out. It should be very interesting.
I'm also looking forward to two films, actually. I saw that Nobuhiro Yamashita, who's one of my favorite Japanese directors, has two movies this year, Over the Fence and My Uncle. But yeah, Over the Fence sounded really intriguing to me, in like a mishmash of lots of different elements of like low-key drama, relationships, and baseball.
Yep, the baseball, yes. Right. It was a title as well as just a reference to it. Yeah, and were any expectations of My Uncle?
I've heard of that, that sounds more in line with the other work by him I've seen, which is kind of like comedy about slackers or slice of life comedy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's also one of the more universally appealing comedy. I guess we get a lot of audience who come to the JFF and ask whether there's a comedy that they could watch that's not too Japanese, because we all know that Japanese comedy
really
is
wacky. Yeah. But Nobuhiro Yamashita's stuff is, from what I've seen, like very accessible, very kind of like low-key, deadpan. I've really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. And My Uncle is no exception, and it's a brilliant comedy. And I guess it's Matsuda Ryuhei who plays the main character, the uncle, that makes it work so well, as well as, of course, the lead character is actually the little boy who's a narrator of this story. And, you know, they go off on an adventure. They go all the way to Hawaii. So that's something different. And with Over the Fence, it's also got a top-notch cast. You've got Odagiri Joe as well as Yu Aoi, who's in some of the other films for this year. Mm-hmm. And it's an unconventional romance, as well as just life in Hokkaido.
I really recommend this guy's cinema to people, so I'd tell people to seek these out.
And Margaret, so we're all excited. Japanese Film Festival kicks off tomorrow. How do we get tickets? Where do we go?
You can just get on JapaneseFilmFestival.net if you want to get your tickets early, or you can just head straight to the cinema and buy the tickets off the box office. But some tickets are already selling out, so it's best to get on the website and book your tickets early.
Do you have any films you'd recommend that we haven't covered?
I would highly recommend Snow Woman. I think it's probably my favorite in this year's program.
Oh, okay.
It's an adaptation of the folklore Snow Woman or Yuki Onna, and some people might be familiar with the classic Kobayashi version called The Woman in the Snow. Hmm. But this Snow Woman, directed by a female director, producer, and actor, Kiki Sugino, is just absolutely fantastic. The soundtrack just really immerses you in that like otherworldly mix of old and new. So while watching it, you don't really know what point in time you're in. And we're also having Kiki Sugino and her lead male co-actor, Munetaka Aoki, for a Q&A after the film on the 24th of November.
Okay, thanks so much. I'll be sure to seek it out.
Fantastic. So the Japanese Film Festival is running for the 16th to 26th of November at Event Centers George Street. Margaret, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we'll be back right after this on Film Fight Club. Welcome back to Film Fight Club. That was, I don't know what that was.
Actual cannibal
Shia LaBeouf, who's the star of our next film.
Borg v. McEnroe. It stars Shia LaBeouf, someone who used to be famous, and Sverre Gudnason as Borg, the Swedish tennis superstar, and Shia LaBeouf as John McEnroe. It is about their famous rivalry. It is a classic tennis film in the classic tennis tradition. There are several tennis fans here, including one person who was ecstatic, beyond ecstatic, to see a film not just about tennis, but that was really, really about tennis. Farad, what did you think of Borg v. McEnroe?
Oh my God, I've been waiting all my life for a tennis movie, and finally it arrived. It arrived. There was tennis, there was seriousness, there was pensive looks, there were people in the shower thinking about tennis. This is exactly the kind of movie I wanted to see. But, you know, honestly, it's interesting to see, because I think what the strength of the movie is that it's a very concentrated portrait of two people. You know, Sven Rahr, who's playing Bjorn Borg, the then number one tennis player in the world, and Shia LaBeouf, who's playing Johnny McEnroe, the kind of bratish upstart, which I think is genius casting, because Shia LaBeouf
basically is John McEnroe. Yeah,
Mr. Vett looks exact. He's the spitting image of Borg. It is incredible.
Oh, it's fascinating. And I think Sven, his kind of portrayal was a bit more challenging, because Borg was always known as the Iceman. And, you know, their rivalry, Johnny Mac and Bjorn Borg, was known as the Fire and Ice rivalry, which is fantastic, because, you know, Johnny Mac was all fire and Borg was all ice and cool and emotionless. So actually, this is actually more like a portrait of Borg than actually any focus on McEnroe. And in that sense,
it's a Swedish film.
Yeah, it's pretty much a Swedish film. The young Borg, the child version of Borg, is played by Borg's actual son, Leo. So we get to see, you know.
That's pretty interesting.
And so it was just fascinating. And, you know, my dad, who was a huge Borg fan, you know, would have definitely killed to see this, because he was a huge Borg fanatic, and he bought into all the Borg's kind of, you know, stylistics about how he didn't have his beats above 50 beats per minute and stuff like that.
Yeah, what this movie really is a film that uses McEnroe's fire as a way to examine Borg's iciness. It's a character study of how and why this guy bottles in all his emotions in order to concentrate them on the game, and how he's actually not an emotionless person, but a highly emotional and passionate person, so much so that despite the veneer of being, you know, very like straight line concentrated guy, is always in danger of toppling if things fall out of line for him.
Absolutely. And this is what I didn't enjoy that about the film, but at the same time, it was for me the biggest attraction, and that this set itself up as Borg v. McEnroe, mano y mano, these two major figures, but it ended up being a film about Borg and McEnroe. And LaBeouf is excellent in this film, and I wanted to see more of it.
Yeah, no, Shia LaBeouf is a terrific actor.
But the thing is, I wanted to see more of what he was capable of, what he was doing. Everything he did was about how it reflected on Borg, about how it impacted Borg, and showing how he developed his persona, how he became the tennis superstar he was. And there were a few moments where, particularly a very pointed scene where Borg saying, no, looked at McEnroe on the field and said, no, I know what he's doing. And we could see the mirror reflection of the two, and I wanted to see more of that, but it was very limited in the film, unfortunately.
It looks at how they're actually very much kindred spirits. But this is, as has been said, a way of drawing out the Borg character more. I think this film has a structure that goes into flashbacks from the early life of Borg and McEnroe. I think we could have lost the ones about McEnroe, because the movie didn't develop that enough for it to feel more than, you know, fat hanging off a lean drama that we have the rest of the way through the film.
Yeah, this should have been called Borg. I mean, sorry if we would have confused the Star Trek fans out there, but this was Borg.
But also, I mean, Shia LaBeouf, we've definitely not giving him credit as an actor. So
he's terrific. There's a reason that people still work with him.
It's interesting that they cast Shia LaBeouf, given that he is, in many senses, a personification of what John McEnroe, as the film says, not necessarily is, but has come to be known as and seen in popular culture.
He's a terrific actor who is known for his off-screen antics and his raging and fighting, just as McEnroe sort of was.
If you guys would indulge my tennis side for a bit, what I love the film, what it also did was highlight and foreshadow the kind of tennis personalities and rivalries which were to come. For example, Borg revolutionized the game with his two-handed / ugly backhand, which is now a staple on the tour. And he basically revolutionized the game with the use of topspin, which now Nadal and other people use. And this kind of very kind of routine-like scientific sort of prominence to the game, which is now basically how tennis is played. They've basically moved towards a more scientific kind of game, which Borg really brought in his prime. And McEnroe is the brash kind of Nick Kyrgios of his day. We can make that comparison with more talent and slightly more achievement than Kyrgios has currently. So I think it's interesting to see about those personalities brought to the game and how we basically play off each other and both are necessary for the bums on seats, per se.
I was never really a two-handed backhand sort of guy, but I do take your point. And I've got to say, we talked about Battle of the Sexes earlier in the year, which was a film which featured tennis, but was not about tennis. This was a film about tennis. This was a film about the game.
Yeah,
and I've got to give full credit to Shia LaBeouf here, because he's not a left-handed person. McEnroe was, and to do a left-handed serve to that pedigree, good on him.
I mean, McEnroe has a distinct style of serving. Anybody who's seen anything about the game knows about that, and Shia was so fantastic. You can just see from his mannerisms about when he tosses the ball up, and those scenes are fantastic, actually. The way they're shot about the toss-ups and the slow motions are fantastic, and if you really like the game, you'd love some of the cinematography in this.
To compare it to Battle of the Sexes, yes, it is much more about the game than that movie, but I found this way more interesting as a drama. Like, that movie didn't really commit to much of anything and didn't really take its themes all the way. This movie is more interesting as a character drama, as well as being more interesting as a film about tennis. It has a very non-linear structure, lots of flashbacks and forwards throughout their lives, which are used to give us more background on the characters. It works pretty well. I think this is a very solid drama. Following up on what Virat said about the cinematography, my one complaint about this movie is I think it's a little bit hampered by its budget. It could be... It's not my one complaint, it's my one major complaint. I think the way that the tennis is visualized becomes a little bit samey after a while, because they don't really have the budget to do the kind, by the look of it, to do the kind of filming that could give you really blow-by-blow coverage of the actual play of the game. Instead, we watch a lot of close-ups of people serving, a lot of close-ups of balls hitting, tennis rackets and faces looking pained. And after a while, because that's all we have and there's so much of it, it's kind of starts to blur together. It would be, those montages of the games would be more interesting if we could get more of a sense of the actual dynamic instead of that being conveyed to us through the changing of the scoreboard and the expressions on people's faces.
Yeah, at the same time, you see in a lot of films, I think Battle of the Sexes did have this going for it, that you could see a bit of crowd interaction because there was a crowd evident there throughout.
Yeah,
and this didn't have that.
Clearly not. They're working pretty cleverly around a probably limited budget.
Yeah, I mean, the film leads up to the fantastic, one would say, the greatest finals of all times at the Wimbledon 1980 final between Borg and McEnroe, and to fans of the 2008 Wimbledon final between Nadal and Federer, I'm sorry, but this match was slightly better. So, if you enjoy your tennis, go and watch this match and relive your memories. People who claim, which is the greatest Wimbledon match of all time? Well, this one definitely has a case to make.
I think it's a little bit too abiding by the cliches of the sports genre, but it's very solidly executed. It's a pretty good drama. I recommend it.
I recommend it too. And the one last thing I'll say about this film is it treats the audience very intelligently. It is something you can enjoy whether you know tennis very well or you don't. Even if you aren't familiar with the rules, there is a point where it goes very pointedly explains what a tiebreaker is. But even if you don't know the ins and outs and love 40, etc., you can enjoy this film. We do recommend it. It is in cinemas tomorrow from November 16. The next film we are talking about is Lucky, which is the last film yet released by Harry Dean Stanton, who sadly passed away earlier this year. It also stars David Lynch and a number of Stanton's close friends and companions.
Character actors, very circle.
And is directed by one of the great character actors of our time, John Carroll Lynch. Team, what did we think of Lucky?
Yeah, look, it's John Carroll Lynch. This is his first time directing, and the screenwriters are also actors who are friends of Harry Dean Stanton, and this is their first time writing. And you can feel it, it's a very undeveloped script. That's my main problem with it. For a movie about aging and the changing of the time and the wisdom of age, it felt really simplistic and really writerly in the worst possible way. That is, characters are always ready to jump to their big writer's monologue about their chosen issue or some story from their life. None of it feels like genuine human interaction. It feels really preordained. Look, Harry Dean Stanton, I think, is one of the greats. He's fantastic in this movie, as he always is, but he's let down by the material around him.
This definitely felt like a Philosophy 101 class to me, and where people...
That's an insult to Philosophy 101 classes.
the kind of classes where people talk about metaphysics in this kind of abstract way or...
Without having any much real substance to it yet.
Yeah, but also, the film is all about this small community and how people come together to basically support each other, but we never actually get a sense of that community at all. It's basically vast expanses of... the great land and the outback kind of feel. And there's this Harry Dean Stanton's character just walking pensively trying to look for meaning.
They're throwing back to Paris, Texas, which is one of his most famous roles, which is a movie that opens with Harry Dean Stanton walking through the desert and, you know, looking at the landscapes and the cacti and all of that. But that movie takes that and then builds it into, you know, a really beautiful character study by the end of it. This movie thinks that that kind of imagery and that kind of atmosphere and the subconscious connection to that in viewers' minds is an end of itself. But it's not given any grounding or further meaning.
Exactly. It's kind of using nostalgia in the worst possible sense, which I would say a lot of studios, big studios and corporations are also doing. But also I guess what this movie proves is that the indie kind of productions are not exempt from that either. So they're using, you know, what Harry Dean Stanton's legacy actually means and just cashing in on that without offering anything new or substantial.
Yeah, I appreciate this is a film which will appeal to very serious Harry Dean Stanton fans. It was made for Harry Dean Stanton fans, in some sense for Harry Dean Stanton and to commemorate his amazing legacy of filmmaking. But at the same time, this for me was just a revolving series of platitudes. There's a few great scenes. There's one where he encounters another World War II veteran, and standalone they're fine. And there are scenes you could reasonably remember from another film, but they do not ground in any sense of character or place. There's a wonderful sequence I did enjoy all on its own where he's at a party and he starts singing, and there's a few like this in the film, but there's nothing enough to maintain a narrative. And towards the end, as emotive as the last scene clearly was and what it means, particularly in light of his recent sad passing, the film does peter out to a great extent.
And this doesn't mean that Harry Dean Stanton isn't great in this. He's always great, and he's still great in this movie. It's just that he has nothing much to do.
Look, a movie that's done this better recently is the third season of Twin Peaks. Interestingly enough, David Lynch acts in both of these productions. In Twin Peaks, directing himself, he knew that he had limited range, and he worked within that. And in this movie, he way outstretches his range.
Yeah this is... we will not be Film Fight Club without talking about Terrence Malick or David Lynch. I'm not a fan of David Lynch. I'm even less a fan of his acting. He's not good in this.
He's acting beyond his range.
I appreciate why he's there, but someone else probably should have been
cast. He should only be allowed to direct himself, basically.
Yeah, or just stick to directing.
Yeah, exactly. But he's fine in the new season of Twin Peaks. But what's that is in itself a goodbye to Harry Dean Stanton. That featured a lot of similar material of Harry Dean Stanton as an old guy who everyone in his community knows, that is a lot more intelligently written and moving than this film is. Probably because this movie is written by 30 and 40 year olds and David Lynch is an actual old man confronting some of these issues. So you can feel the maturity and depth in what it does. I recommend seeking that out instead as a tribute to Harry Dean Stanton.
So Lucky is in cinemas tomorrow. The last one we are talking about is Blade of the Immortal, which is also in cinemas tomorrow. We caught this one earlier in the year. It's been doing the festival rounds and now it is getting a cinema release.
I am fantastic. I'm floored that a Takashi Miike film is getting a wide release.
Well, so did Harakiri and 13 Assassins from the same distributor, Icon.
I know, and it's fantastic. I think this is just... I don't know how to explain
it. It's a lot of fun. Look,
really
it's an adaptation of a famous long-running manga about an immortal samurai taking on really bad dudes. Look, it's a lot of fun. My really well-staged action, as you'd expect from Takeshi Miike, doesn't take itself too seriously. There's a lot of Death Becomes Her type visual comedy out of the characters slicing each other apart and not dying, putting themselves back together again. My major problem with this movie is that in condensing the story of a manga that has a whole lot of fighting, they focused too much on the battles. There's not enough connective tissue. After, like, at first when it settles into a rhythm of boss fight after boss fight after boss fight, and I was thinking, okay, this is fun. And then I was ready for there to be more story, and I was expecting that, and then suddenly, oh, another boss fight. By the end of the movie, you know, it shows that there is too much of a good thing. It's a long movie, but it's drowned in bloodshed, and after a while, you wish for more of a breather, but still, a lot of fun.
It's like taking the worst parts of Scott Pilgrim vs.
Yes,
the World
exactly.
And stitching a movie together.
Oh, that's not a...
No, seriously, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World is what I thought of when I saw it as well.
Yeah, but also at the same time, what I will recommend, and there's some beautiful parts of it, it's the way it's shot. I mean, Takashi Miike has a very distinctive sense of the frame and the way he uses black and white and switches back to color.
Yeah, fantastic.
It's,
which
very unique.
Tarantino was ripping off in Kill Bill.
Oh, definitely.
I heard something about this film. There was a particular number of deaths or death sequences.
Oh,
the count is pretty high.
Oh, yeah. And it treats it as a joke, which it has to, because otherwise there's no way you could survive this kind of
one movie. One of the sort of running gags of the film is how the immortal's hand is chopped off and he's basically carrying it around in a chain and he uses his chopped off hand to basically kill a lot of people. So it's really fantastic. But also what's interesting about it is the really bits of social realism and social commentary that seep in while in between these boss fights, which I did not expect expecting this kind of fun kind of romp.
A fun kind of romp. Blade of the Immortal is in cinemas tomorrow, as is Lucky and Borgie McEnroe. The Japanese Film Festival will be starting at Event Cinemas George Street. Will run through to the 26th of November. We will be back next week talking about the biggest, fightingest film of the year so far, and that is Justice League. Oh, dear, I don't know how to feel about this
excited
one.
Excited is a strong word, Glenn.
I'm excited to talk about it, and it has some of my very favourite actors. It has Gal Gadot from Wonder Woman earlier, which was excellent, so
that's
we're hoping
it.
That's up to that's that sort it. Of standard, but we shall see. We're also talking in much more detail about some of the screenings and films at the Japanese Film Festival, which we will be reviewing. Do check it out. Have a wonderful night. Enjoy movies. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
His that was good. Topples to the floor, expressionless.
That was really good.
You fall to your knees and catch your breath. You're finally safe from Shia LaBeouf.